Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. My guest today is none other than the one and only Juan Zuniga. He's currently serving as the Vice President of Culinary at Quest Food Management Services and brings nearly two decades of experience to the table. Prior to joining Quest, Juan's experience expands from the likes of California Pizza Kitchen, higher education institutions, Macy's, and Pret A Manger. He loves shoes and fashion, bringing it into the kitchen. Enjoy this conversation with Juan Zuniga. Today's podcast is sponsored by Invacus. Invacus provides vacuum packaging solutions for food service and packaging professionals. Their brands include Hinkleman vacuum sealers and Greenvac multi-purpose pans. This equipment can help operators save time, money, and allows kitchen teams to be more efficient in their day-to-day operations. I've been using the Greenvac pans and I absolutely love them and its marinating capabilities. I can reduce those times to minutes instead of hours. If you want to learn more, check out Invacus at Invacus.com. That's Invacus.com. So I think it's important for people to know how we met because it's an interesting story. Because it was university. You can go, you can tell the story.
No, I think,
I want your perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think both perspectives would be really important, right?
Because from my end, right, I had just gotten into the university.
Yeah.
Right. And I was first a front of house guy.
Right.
And that wasn't my forte.
Definitely not.
Right. I did the job okay. Fine. But like, I was like, I don't want to do this. But being told, oh, the best you're going to be is a lead cook in the kitchen. I was like, no, that's not going to work. I'm not driving from Joliet to the city for that.
Yeah.
So when I came, and you didn't have the luscious beard
no beard.
Any fashion, but you were all suited up and everything else. Because we were in Damon, because you were there always by the food court.
In the food court, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this guy, he's kind of like cool, like the cool guy, but I'm so busy. And then I get shipped to the south. Well, not shipped, but I took that position to the south side. And the only time I'd see you was when I'd bring over financials or the money over. That's the only time I ever got to see you. And then we'd have our 2-minute conversations. So it was like, that's the only, I was just like, oh yeah, he's a cool guy. Like, he's just like, keep it up. We hear great things on the south side. And that's all I ever got. And then it was, oh, Juan's gone. Right. And I'm on the south side and in residential because you're in retail. So it wasn't even like a direct impact. Next thing you know, he's gone. And then, what, 2 years ago? Year and a half now?
No, it's almost three, man.
It's been, no.
Yeah, almost 3 years.
Wow. And then all of a sudden you call me up for another potential opportunity. Yeah. And then next thing you know, we're working back together. Yeah. That was insane. So now we're working together and then actually getting to actually do stuff. It's pretty cool. So again, like seeing your perspective of it, because obviously it's going to be completely different.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do remember because we had, I was a senior retail director, right? And we had Bill Langlois, who was my counterpart for the residential that you knew. And he's like, I got these great people. And he started bringing people on. And I remember you came on and doing my rounds, I would have to go visit all my retail accounts and I would go into the dining halls. And I remember stepping in and seeing you in your suits. And they're like, yeah, this guy's a front of house guy. And I was just like, cool, dude. I don't know if he's a front of house guy, though, right? Because I don't know, like, I'm not really good at a lot of technical things, but I think I'm really good at people and reading people, right? And that's kind of what I do. And I just remember sitting there like, man, this guy is a cool dude, but I don't know if front of house is his thing. And our director of operations, like, yeah, Jeff Fell, he's doing so good. I'm like, but front of house, really? And she's like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, I mean, I talk to him all the time. He's a cool dude, I think. But doesn't he have come from, like, culinary? Isn't he a chef? And she's like, yeah, that's what Bill said. And I'm like, why don't we use him as that? She's like, I don't know if there's a need for him right now. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, but I don't know if front of house is his thing. And then it kind of progressed. And then I remember she was excited. Amy was excited because she had talked about you becoming the chef for one of the dining halls.
Yeah,
because
what was his name? Ron? Rob? something.
The guy.
But he just bounced.
He just bailed on us, right? And you kind of got an opportunity there. And I think instantly there was, from the staff, the morale of the staff, and I think just the quality of things that were happening instantly changed. So then because of that, you instantly became somebody that was on the map, on the radar for everybody. So whether you knew or not, you were somebody that I was already being held in high regard because of what you were able to do. And then by default, because I ran into retail, or I ran the retail side, we would utilize you, and you came to me and I was like, hey, I need food for one of my departments. And you're like, I can do this, 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 this. And I was like, thank you. Like, the executive chef on campus is battling me, and here you are telling me I can do all these things for you. So I went back to Amy Trujillo, which is the regional district manager. And I was like, hey, you know, this is the program we're going to put together. This is where, who's working on it, and this is how we're going to drive it, and it's going to be internally done. And she's like, can we do it? I was like, yeah, I have no doubts. And then you just executed, and you kicked ass at it.
But it was easy because we were basically doing the same menu we were running.
But it was easy for you, where for other people it was hard to comprehend or to process all that. So I think in turn what happened was, from a retail side and my team, we looked at you as somebody that was reliable and somebody that was good at their job. But then I would just start thinking, as you started doing that, you would start coming through the facility and I would see you, right? And then that's when I had started on my team, Bowtie Wednesdays. So for me, I guess appearance is important to me, right? I like to dress up. I like to look good. And I think we started a little thing to have fun, some Bowtie Wednesdays. And I remember you came and it was crazy pants. And you guys, we need to
wacky
do something.
Wacky chef pants Wednesday. Go. I said, this is not fair. They get at least wear bow ties and wear cool stuff. I have to wear the same thing every day. I was like, please, please, can I just get some cool pants and wear them? And Bill, he's just like, I don't care, as long as you keep performing, I don't care what you wear.
Yes, I used to remember we would look forward to Wednesdays to see you guys walking over with financial information to hand off to the main office, but to see what the pants were for that Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I just remember seeing all your craziness, and that to me, right, instantly is like, cool, somebody that doesn't want to fit into the mold or be like everybody else, that to me is like, I mean, 100,000 gold stars right there. Because that, to me, it's what it is. It's what do you do to differentiate yourself? It's okay to go with the flow, but what are you doing that goes against the flow? Because there's nothing wrong with going against the flow. So I try to look for individuals that do that, and you were one of those people. And then we kind of hit it off, and then I leave and, you know, do my thing and go around and work at restaurants. I thought I'd never do contract services again, honestly. Food service. I was like, I'm done with this, right? So then I go to the retail side again, do restaurants again, cafes. And then the opportunity came up, and then they're like, oh yeah, Jeff Fell. And I'm like, yeah, I know Jeff, and you can interview with Jeff. And I'm like, I don't know if it's gonna be really that much of an interview, but sure, I'll talk to Jeff. And then I just remember calling, and I think it's like the first 2 minutes of the formalities, and then
Oh, yeah, right. It was out the window. Yeah, I was just over. Like, I don't know. We didn't work a lot together. However, you were the cool dude over there.
Yeah.
But the reason I wanted to bring it up is because of that gap, that time frame gap of burning bridges in this industry. And it's the biggest, smallest, biggest, smallest, however you look at it, industry. That's how I see it. Because you run into people that you thought you would never see again. And the next thing you know, they're the person you're talking to for a job or for a reference or just – I need a connection. Oh, I know somebody. And what has been your experience kind of with that, you know, burning bridges and like what you've ran into about even others in this industry?
I mean, I think that's interesting, right? I like to say this is the biggest, smallest industry in the world, right? And I'm sure all industries will tell you that. But it's terrible to say, but there's something incestuous about the hospitality industry, right? I think everybody knows everybody. But if you don't know somebody, they know somebody that knows somebody that knows you. But I learned this early on in my career. I went to school for sports medicine. I played sports in college, but I also realized that school wasn't for me really, really quickly, that this is not what I wanted to do with my life. So I thought serving was easy. I was like, cool. I blew out my knee. It's like, I'm going to go be a server, whatever. I got nothing to do. parents are like, take the semester off of school. Sure. I became a server at Chili's and was doing that. And it'd been about 6 months and the general manager got fired. And he was a big fan of mine and I got to do anything I wanted because he liked me. And the assistant general manager absolutely hated me. So I walk into the location or my job the next day for my shift. And I'm like, hey, where's Ken? They're like, he got fired. I'm like, that sucks. Who's in charge? And they're like, John is. I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. Literally 5 minutes later, the guy's like, hey, can you come into the office with me? I was like, yeah. And he's like, hey, we're going to let you go today. And I was like, for what? He's like, I mean, I can give you a thousand reasons, but ultimately it's because I just don't want you on my team. I was like, oh man, wow. So whatever, go find another job. I was like, it's a server, right? I can go do something. And then a year and a half later, I am a manager at Applebee's. And they're like, you have an interview. And it was John, the guy that fired me. It was the most awkward, uncomfortable.
Just, oh, so you had to interview? You actually had to interview
Yeah, he had to interview with me to get a job with us. So
I bet it didn't go well.
No, I mean.
I mean, he may have interviewed y'all. But yeah, I'm sure the outcome was not what he was expecting.
I mean, he interviewed. I don't know what I was listening to, though, right? Because to me, I saw once he walked in, I was done, right? It was like, oh, this is a no. Yeah. And it's as terrible as it is to say, that's where I was. But then right there, I think after that interview, I realized that, man, like, these restaurants are all one and the same. Like, if I'm going to want to work here, I'm going to have to work there. Like, all these managers, all these people are all just going from one place to the next. And to me, it's easier to start building my network than it is to piss people off. Because if I need something, I want to be able to rely on other people based on the relationship they had with me. And as I progressed in my career, that's kind of how I've always looked at relationships. It's not a what's in it for me kind of deal, but it's more of a how do we leverage what we've built together to help us better ourselves in the future, right? Because I think I like to learn every single day, right? If I'm not learning, I feel like I sucked for the day. If I don't learn something new, this day was a failure kind of deal. However, I think in relationships, I think if you're not uplifting somebody you're in a relationship with or helping them get better, you're no good at what you're doing either. I think it's a two-way street, right? So I think when I talk about relationships or when we have conversations and I'm able to reach out to people that I know or, hey, I can put you in contact with people, I think to me that's what the hospitality industry is about. Like,
For sure. It's not just the customer, but it's taking care of the people.
Yeah, I got a guy for you. Do you want to talk to them or whatever? And I think that's been really, really important in this industry for me that, I mean, I got my current role because somebody knew that I was really good at my job and they're like, hey, you should just reach out to them to see if they'd be interested.
Yeah, it's a small, again, the biggest, smallest industry out there. You have a motto that you told me. And I this is definitely on my wall. I've got two. Now this is my second because I don't, you know, there's models and you can listen to them, but less is more.
Less is more.
Elaborate on less is more.
Less is more. I mean, I think less is more just applies to everything that we do in life. I think this is not just the way I look at my professional career, but I think as my personal life as well, is be really good at something. And do what you love to do instead of trying to be average at everything, right? I think early on in my career in restaurants, it was really frustrating to bounce around in roles thinking, oh, I got to learn this, I got to learn this, I got to learn this. And it's good to know these things, but there's experts in everything they do. So you let them do their thing.
Let the experts be the experts.
That's right. So then for me, it's been like, let me focus on what I'm good at and let me focus on less things. And this applies to everything, like I said, but let me focus on these small five things that I can do. And the other five that everybody may want may not be necessary, because if I do these really, really, really well, nobody's going to even think about these other five. All I'm going to do is spread my resources. I'm going to dilute the product that I'm trying to create. I'm going to dilute my message. I think when I think about from a professional standpoint, when I look at retail environments, why would I want to have 25 items on a shelf when I'm really only good at seven, right? So let me get seven of those really, really good items and put a lot more of those out and not waste resources trying to create the other 18, because those really, they're more of a hindrance to your growth and to who we are or who you are than it is to anything else that may happen. So I've always looked at like less is more. I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to grow or take on new things, but I think for me, less is more has helped me get further along, because I've learned by taking on less, I've become better at what I do, and it's been able to help me expand. Because when I'm ready to take on the next thing, I can add that to my repertoire instead of having a average skill set at something and a lot of average skill sets.
And it applies to kind of what you said, not to not take on new things, but within the moment, the project, the idea. Prime example, this podcast. And I've told you this story, but coming up with the name, the logo, my mom, you know how I am. Like, I can get crazy like you and like bouncing stuff everywhere, and I'm spending hours trying to design and how do I do this and what are we going to call it? And then we had some crazy name, and then let's just say Chef Jeff and put in some little subtitle, and then I take it home and I apologize to my wife now. She shoots it down, right? She's like, "Whoa, what's the name going to be and what's it going to look like?" And I tell her, and she just laughs and she goes, "That's dumb. Like, that's like, why aren't you playing on something else?" And she just within 30 seconds just says, "Why don't you call it like Fell Into Food?" And I was just like, literally, I just spent I don't know how many hours trying to figure out a name for this thing, and you within 30 seconds, because she wasn't thinking it like I was in this extravagant way. It was just boiled it down, and then she goes, "Then I show her the logos." Same thing. She goes, "What's with this cow? You keep putting cow pictures on all these logos." It was like a cow with a microphone. She goes, "You grew up on a farm, man. Just do something with corn." And I was like, "Corn on a microphone?" And she goes, "Yeah." And then it literally took me, I think, all of 20 minutes to mash it all together. And I was like, less is more. Like, stop overthinking some of these things, because in the end, you're going to get a result that even if it's not the most optimal result, at least you're getting a result. It's getting off the dock and actually doing something.
Yeah, and even when you expand on something, right? And I think the cool part about it is that even when you expand on the less is more idea, right? At the foundation is the simplest thought or form of anything that you were doing. You go back to that and you're like, man, I didn't deviate too much from where I started. So all that extra work was really a waste of energy and time in some instances.
Oh, for sure. Ton. Switching to, because you had a little stint in New York, right? So operating both New York, Chicago markets, and even other parts of the country, kind of what nuances or culinary preferences have you kind of noticed? Like, I noticed, like, from Chicago to the Indy market, it's a lot slower. People don't, I'm used to the let's get shit done. And you kind of went over there, and it was kind of like how I grew up, where it was just kind of like, it's all right, we'll get it done. What have you seen, you know, across the country?
So I think it depends on, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time in a lot of different markets. New York was interesting, man. I've never seen, so born and raised in Chicago and spending a lot of time in Illinois, when I was a server, lunch was lunch, right? Like, you had a lunch rush and it was what it was in the restaurants. New York, I feel like, well, in the heart of New York, Manhattan, you know, the boroughs, like, everybody's going out to eat for lunch, man. Like, and then I was like, I was trying to grasp my, just get a grasp of that as to why. And it's just homes are smaller, apartments are smaller, right? You're not cooking in your kitchen as much as you would. You don't have that much space. So people are always on the go for lunch. So what I saw really quickly is that lunch became, and I worked for Pret a Manger in New York, and it's a very cafe style European cafe, very grab and go motto that everything's pre-made, sandwiches are pre-packaged, and you just grab them. They're fresh, they're made daily, cleaner ingredients, organic ingredients. So that was exciting. But people are very, very much driven by speed of service in New York. So for lunch, it's like a completely different clientele to the dinner, right? So when that first lunch segment is people are just on the go, sometimes I wonder if they even cared what it tasted like, right? Like, just I don't even know.
Shovel food in for right, nutrients.
I don't even know if the lines at like the Chipotles, the Cavas, the Pretz were there because people loved the food or because it was simplicity, right? Or convenience. But then when you get to about 4:30, 5 o'clock, all these restaurants in these same areas are just like booming, like they're just nonstop. But these are experiences, like people are now going out for experiences. But what you see from the staff is that they're working with the same urgency of like the way people walk in New York. And I know everybody talks about that, that there's a difference in the speed of the way people do things. There is. And in the restaurants, the staff works at that same speed. And it's really intense watching these restaurants and these staff members just go to town and like, man, they're running circles around what I thought was fast. And then New York was just really, really an experience upon itself because from the food world, right, from a culinary standpoint and all the creativeness. But I think what's really, really cool about New York is the diversity in the food there. And then I think that's there's more of an entrepreneurial spirit from the culinary side of the world in New York, where people are, you got your food carts, you got people coming up with people selling tamales and all kinds of things out of bags or out of corners, not even real like food carts. And I'm like, man, I'm sure there's no licenses going on. I'm sure there's no food safety going on.
No way.
But honestly, it's probably the best tasting food I've ever had.
Probably.
But then as the whole East Coast is the same way, Boston, Boston's a little more slow paced in comparison to New York. I would say it's in between a Chicago and a New York. And I feel like Boston's a little different depending on where you go. Philadelphia was interesting. Philadelphia has great food, but I just feel like that one's a more relaxed environment. But New York was definitely by far the most intense from a flavor standpoint, from a just the customer service, the employees, the people trying to execute what they're trying to do, like to see some of the things that they're coming up with is bar none. I mean, and then having spent some time in California, that in its own right is a whole different model too. It's became more of a, we'll get to it when we can kind of deal. And, yeah. And I think they're very, like it was really interesting, right? Because I know that there's the whole plant-based push now and vegetarian veganism and all that kind of stuff. But I think, I mean, this was in early 2000s where I was spending some time in California to kind of see that already popping up. The California Pizza Kitchens of the world creating their cauliflower crust, right? And having gluten-free dough and having vegetarian pizzas, vegetarian rolls, all these kind of things, because that's where their market was going. But then introducing that nationwide has been kind of really interesting to see. But California was just bizarre. And I mean, the labor legislations there make it a little tougher to drive that you see in Midwest, maybe the East Coast. But that's kind of driven that where there's that. That's where they get that California, hey, dude, attitude, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's also driven by legislation a lot. Right.
You brought up plant. Is it here to stay?
It's going to be here forever. It's never leaving. I think, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the we are what we eat, right? I think the reality is that plant-based is here.
Have you watched that new Netflix documentary?
Yeah.
The twin experience where they give them one an omnivore diet and the other plant-based diet.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, right? I think plant-based is here to stay. I think what concerns me about plant-based is that we're saying, in a sense, people are likening plant-based to clean eating. But the amount of ingredients that go into making something plant-based may make the clean argument a moot point. right? Because in some instances, as I read labels, I'm like, oh man, some of these ingredients aren't as good as me going to a non-plant-based. What are the health effects one way or the other, right? Is it as damaging for me to eat a non-plant-based item as it would be to eat this plant-based item that has a lot more things that may impact me?
Right. Well, we don't know, right? Because
exactly.
There's no research, no studies, and we're not going to know for 20, 30 yeah. years of what the true impact is of, I won't say fillers, but those extra items to make it taste or 100%. Texture to, because it's not just like they're taking, I mean, the only company I know that's truly taking like vegetables is like a Dr. Prager's, where they're taking correct. Truly, it's basically all vegetables and making products out of it. Yeah, I agree. I think it's not going anywhere. I think it's just going to continue, and I think it's going to go less on the, oh, let's just try and mimic meat.
100%.
Right? Into more of like, how do we make other derivatives of items that people would want to eat?
100%. Because here's the reality of it, right? Like, if you became a vegetarian or vegan, like my daughter did it for 3 months, okay? And I was just, I laughed because we had a deal, and she's like, I'm gonna bet you that I can be vegan for 3 months. I was like, there's no way. Like, my daughter's a big steak eater. And I was like, there's no way. And then as I was going, I was like, man, I'm making meals for her. There's all these other options. There's good options for her. And she was happy and she did it. And, but I think what is happening is that the real meat eater, I can see a flexitarian, right? I can see them occasionally saying, hey, I want to switch. But a vegetarian or a vegan, they're not looking for that same flavor profile. They may be looking for the flavor that you can build with other stuff, but they're not looking for the texture. They're not looking for the look of
the smell,
the steak, right?
Like,
they don't want to cut into something and see the juices flowing out, right? That's not what that's not one of the things that we're going for. So I think it's been great to see all these people attacking that. Oh, this feels like a steak, or I'm looking at a product now where they're like, oh, you could put this next to a steak and you wouldn't tell the difference. And I'm like, well, yes, I would. First. Secondly, if I'm a vegan, I don't want it to look like a steak. That's right. Not why.
Right.
Right. So I think is going to, you'll start seeing in this space is that less is more, like comfort foods, simpler foods, things that we eat every day. Right. Some of the stuff that we're putting out is like, cool, we have plant-based tenders. How many people are eating tenders every day?
Yeah.
I mean, my daughter had tenders once every 2 weeks. Right. But it's the other stuff. What are we doing? Like, how are we teaching people what is in food, or how can we help them really develop it? Because I think the vegan diet can be something that you can really expand upon and really jump into without having to fill it with.
Yeah. With fake or faux products. And I know your daughter always gives you the scoop because you're always commenting and saying, my daughter said this. My daughter has that. What product? There's got to be something that's, I haven't heard anything from you in a while of, we have to try this. Because she's called out like hip peas.
Hip, right? Yeah. We did Celsius.
Celsius before.
4 years ago. It blew up.
And you're just like, we have to try this. Uptime. I know you found that at a trade show. Any other products that you see up on the up and up?
You know, I haven't really. I guess there's so many things happening, right? I think social media is such a great tool. It's like it's double-edged sword, right? Like it's making kids walking zombies, right? As people may say. But at the same time, like it's so much information being out there. And it's amazing what it drives for us. But as far as like what's coming, it's so tough, man, because all it takes is one influencer to jump on something and then things blow up. And I think for me, it's more about trying to stay close to what's happening, right? To have an ear and open mind to what's cool, what's not cool. I mean, this is branding, but about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Champion made like a resurgence. Right. And I remember in my days growing up, Champion was like Kmart. Like, I mean, we grew up pretty dire situation. Right. However, Champion to us even then was like, oh, this is like the low brand. And then when Champion made its resurgence a few years ago, my kids are like, I want Champion. I'm like,
it was Walmart, right? Wasn't it at Walmart?
That has it. They have it now. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was their
I thought it was
brand.
Kmart. I don't know.
Was it Kmart? It was one of the yeah.
It was a Mart. However, when it came, I was like, I can't, I'm in good conscience buy you Champion. Like, that's not cool. I don't care what you tell me. But then I realized, like, man, what I think is cool is obviously not cool anymore. But I think that goes to food too. And I think what may have not worked back then will work now. What hasn't worked 5 years ago could work now, right? People have changed. People are a lot more educated about food than I've ever seen ever. People have more advanced palates than I've ever seen, right? Like school lunches. Pizza is not driving our business anymore, right? People want food. And that's what's, it's so crazy to me. So from what's coming, I mean, I hear all these things, but nothing changes, right? It's always what the next big thing is always going to be something that we think ain't it, but the kids do, right? And it's so tough, right? Like Starbucks has done a great job of adapting to, all right, we got to keep our ears closed to what the influencers are asking for, because I mean, in a weird way, they do speak for a big part of the population. Look at the Stanley mugs right now, which I don't understand.
Everywhere.
But yeah, that was great marketing on their part.
What is it, these Stanley mugs? I don't understand. Yeah. One person blew it up on
social media.
Social media.
And then it went to Etsy, and then here we are.
Yeah. So we're going to pivot from food to clothes, because clothes is in the food industry. You're a fashion guy. You rock the shoes. You got everything.
Shoes is my big.
But you've seen what's out in the market now. Like, and the reason I go there is because of what's been out between uniforms. And I want to get like someone from Chef Works or some of these other companies, Shoes for Crew, to talk more about like how it's evolved. The shoes I'm wearing today, like they look like nice dress shoes. However, they're kitchen.
Cole Haan, man.
Kitchen non-slips. And some of the chef coats that are out there now.
Death leisure wear.
That's where it's all at. The new Varcala coat. It's recycled, fully recycled. Any other, do you see anything else in that, just briefly in that, being the fashion guy?
I just think shoes are going to be the next thing, right? I think you slowly start seeing it to creep in, right? I think people like to express themselves, right? And I think your appearance is an excellent way to do it. Like, I grew up with an affinity for color, man, like bright colors.
Clearly.
So, but when I got into the professional environment, I didn't have that outlet, right? It wasn't okay to wear a bright pink shirt with a powder blue tie or something, right? But that's what I wanted to do. So then for me, it was like, I can wear really extravagant socks, some cool cufflinks, or I can wear some shoes, right? And I grew up with shoes and sneakers. I mean, I can't tell you how many sneakers I have, but I think that's where the next thing in the kitchen is going to be. I think it's just sneakers, right? I think they've done a good job with the athleisure wear, right? That's the joggers and everything that's happening now. The cool color chef coats, right? Because everybody wants to wear colors. I mean, I got my pink chef coat, and everybody, anytime I wear it, people are like, where'd you get it? I want that one. I want that. Because everybody's conformed to what it had to be.
Yeah, go back to Loyola days. That was the only expression I had was my socks.
Yeah.
I would wear crazy socks, and the staff would always ask, what socks are you wearing today, chef? Or we played a game of, what is chef's socks today?
Correct.
And then it turned into, can I wear some of these printed pants? And even those have faded away. I've been trying to find more. It's hard to find printed pants because of some of these, all these other innovative things in the space.
Right.
And so now you can wear different shoes. You've got different pants to wear. You've got different coats. So now it's not just the typical white coat, black pants, black socks, black shoes.
Yeah. And I think the days of those pants are dying because there's so many other things, right? I feel like it won't be long before there's a different version of what a chef coat looks like, right? You're already starting to see it. I mean, but the traditional chef coats are few and far in between. I mean, I have one white chef coat. I've had one white chef coat in my last 12 years of any time I've worked in a kitchen, just because You know, it was cool to do black for a while because that was outside of the box. But now it's like, man, you can get everything under the rainbow now. But I still think that shoes are going to be the next big push in this. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the big players start coming up with non-slip shoes. I just think from a being able to be used all over the place, you see New Balance jumping into the nursing industry, right? The hospitals and creating special shoes for nurses and things like that. I think you're going to start seeing people get creative with, I think, like, if I was Nike, like, you jump in the game right now, right? You have a perfect tick. Why can't that be a knife handle, right? And then it's a knife, right? There's so many things to do.
You can do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
And you know there's going to be chefs out there that are going
to
want.
Right. All it takes is one, right? To somebody to see mm-hmm. one, and then it blows up. But I think really shoe footwear is where it's going to – you're going to start seeing the next change in the kitchens and the industry just because people are tired of wearing the heavy boots, right? The clogs or
they
whatever.
They had the Crocs and the clogs had their heyday for a little while. All right, let's pivot. We've talked food. We've talked clothes. I want to go tech. And I know it's not your forte per se. However, I always like to razz you about it. Any tech you see shaping the future for a culinary experience could be in terms of the customer, behind the scenes operation. I mean, you see stuff like I do, but seeing your perspective on it.
I think two things, right? I think labor markets are going to be driving the tech speeding that up in terms of what we see. But I really I do feel like this self-automated robot-driven robots to your table dropping off your food. I think we're going to start seeing that pop up a lot more. But I really think the thing that to me is the most, I don't know, like out there that is going to happen is the piece of equipment that we have in here, right? Like the being able to make some food, reduce your prep time by making things in bulk and being able to ensure that the quality of the ingredients never going to be impacted. I think that's where we're going. I think that's what's the most exciting to me. I think seeing what it can be and what we can do with it, I think is really going to drive some of this technology to evolve and even become more important. It's what's happening in our restaurants, in the fast food industry. I think in the fast food industry, you're starting to see these robots already, right? You're starting to see the arms that are doing the burger
Flippy,
patties.
Good old Flippy.
Or like I remember seeing, I don't know, it was like 7 years ago, the first time I saw a salad arm, right? Making the salad, spinning it.
Did you see the new one? Because Sally died, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who was it? DoorDash? Invested in that? Was it DoorDash? I did it. One of the big food delivery companies invested.
Yeah, it was
invested.
A big one. Was it Grubhub?
No. It was Grubhub or DoorDash. Yeah, it was one of the two. But Sally died. But have you seen the new one now? And I don't know who is behind it, where rather than it being almost like a vending style, it's almost like a table, and it goes underneath, and then the ingredients are dropped, and it just keeps moving these, and then it gets to the end user. So you've still got someone there manning it, but as orders are getting placed, they're just finishing it and finishing packaging it. So there's another evolution and wave. I mean, people, I think were like, well, that maybe design version didn't work. We're gonna try something else.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many different things. I mean, I remember in my previous life working with some people, and I remember the vending machines that can make you a burger in 6 minutes, and it was making you a fresh burger, and it was really good ingredients in the vending machine. And I was like, get out of here, man!
Yeah, what was the one we saw it in our?
Oh, that was
year? What was it? Chow bao?
Bao chow bao? Yeah, something like that.
That makes the dumplings. And
yeah,
stuff?
That makes the dumplings. Yeah, bao wow. One of those, right? They already do it, right? And it's amazing what they do. But to see where that is going, that tells me, like, man, we haven't even hit the base of where we can be and what we can do with technology.
Well, and you got to get the public. Because they think vending machine because of the age group they're at, and they go, oh, food out of a vending machine, that can't be that good. It's a perception.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I think, if you slap like a Whole Foods label on the side of it, people would be like, hey, there you go. Healthy. It's organic, right? So good. I think it's, to your point, it's all about perception. But I just think it's crazy what's happening. I think seeing like, I mean, you turned me on to some of this technology, right? The Henkelmans, right? The the Aero machine here, right? You've turned me on to these. And then it kind of blew my mind. I'm like, hold on, like, and you know how I am. I'm a big, like, here, let me throw some a million ideas out, because what I see, I think can become more. And then my mind just starts racing. And I'm like, man, what, like, there's so much untapped.
Yeah, my brain is, it's why, and I'm never, I don't think I'm going to change anytime soon, is the wire, is the hoodless kitchen. It's, oh, it's, yeah. It's at some point, it's going to get adopted. Eventually, people will latch on, or there will be a movement where people are like, why are we spending all this money on hoods and everything that goes into cleaning, and it'll just be a fully hoodless kitchen?
I agree.
They've got hoodless fryers. They've you got hoodless, hoodless anything. Kitchen.
Well, two things, right? Like, from a labor standpoint, think about the cleaning mm-hmm. that you're minimizing, right, from all the grease and everything. And then from a cost standpoint of getting your hoods cleaned every quarter.
Well, a hood alone can be hundreds of thousands of dollars, 100%. And it's got to get up to the roof. Right. So if you're in a certain building, you just don't have that opportunity.
And if you're hoodless, you have zero limitations onto where you can open.
Yeah, it's just electricity, really, at that point, especially if you go all electrical. Maybe gas, depending on if you want some gas-powered stuff. But
So then let me ask you then, what are your thoughts on the whole gas range debate? Gas,
so,
electric?
So I have started to change.
You have?
I have. Okay. Because of the technology that's come out in electrical and the controls that are so consistent and being able to change temperatures at a dime, I think that we will start to see more people adopting, getting away. I do. I think that chefs will start to slowly get away from the flame. Not only, like you said, about with labor shortage, whatever, like to reduce injuries, claims. You don't have open flames. So now you've got an electric. A lot of these you can touch. So even if it's whatever, it's got those sensors that it won't burn you. All right. So you've reduced injuries. You have better controls. And the new ones that are coming out are size of this table and the whole thing. So wherever you put your pot, you can set, that's what I want. So you're not limited to, it's got to be on this burner or this spot on my range. I can put a pot of any size anywhere and control what I'm doing with it.
So would you have one in your home?
I think I would now. I think I would.
How am I going to heat up tortillas, man?
I mean, that's where you...
There you go.
I don't
you
know.
See?
You buy, go, okay, go to GFS, buy a little Sterno, and then boom, you can still do your tortillas.
That's my one hiccup, man. Like, I'm all for moving everything to electrical until I talk about in my upbringing, right, my culture, we cook tortillas on an open flame, right? Like, people talk about, like, oh, I have kitchen hands. I call them tortilla hands, right? Like
tortilla
right?
hands.
Right? Like, I can flip tortillas, right? So that's honestly the only thing that's ever held me up about the electrical.
Just get a little Sterno.
It's not the same, bro.
It's a fire. I don't see how it's not the same. It's putting it on fire.
The texture and the flavor.
Okay, whatever. You and your tortillas. Let's get in the weeds.
All right.
Sweet or savory?
Where
do you
sweet.
Stand? So definitely
sweet.
How did I know that was coming?
That's my guilty pleasure, man, just popping candy.
Yeah, I know. I sit like at the office and just snack and
I eat like a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You want some candy? No, yeah. I'm good. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm
already in my third bag by then.
What's your favorite candy then?
It depends.
Can't include a chocolate. It could be chocolate, like gummy.
So no, it depends, right? So like for me, if I'm doing, like there's versions, right? Like if I want, like, I'm not a traditional chocolate fan per se, right? Traditional chocolate in the sense. But if you said Snickers, Twix, I include those as chocolate, but they're really not chocolate in my opinion, right? So in that world, it's got to be a Butterfinger.
Yes. I knew it was going there because I have the same affinity for them.
100%, right? Like, love it. But if it's now, if I'm looking for something jelly-ish, I love the Sweetheart Ropes right now. Like Sweetheart Ropes.
Oh, yeah?
They're amazing.
The one with the nerds on it or just...
No, just the regular Sweetheart Ropes. Cherry, can't go wrong with that. Right, but then if I'm looking for like hard candy, like I love me some Jolly Ranchers.
You do like the
right?
Jollies.
So, and that's the thing, right? So it depends what mood I'm in, right? Like I think in my backpack now I have some M&Ms and some Twizzlers just in case what mood I'm in.
Me. It doesn't surprise me.
But yeah, definitely sweet all day, every day. But then sweet also incorporates my, like, I got to have a nutty butter. I got to have a honey bun. So that's what I'm saying. So it's,
I mean,
it's
when it's
tough.
Christmas time and my affinity for Christmas tree cakes, eat those all day, every day. All right. You grew up in Chicago. Best food in Chicago.
Ooh. What kind of food?
just if you had to pile them together, I know it's a very broad question, but like you got to pick the one spot or flavor profile where you're going.
In Chicago, like to me, Chicago, everywhere I've been in the country and I've hit all parts of it, nobody matches Chicago in Mexican food.
Really?
Nowhere, man. Like California, like I've had it. Been to Texas. I actually have a cousin who has three taco trucks in Texas. And nobody. New York, I was disappointed. I was like, I'm never going to eat Mexican food again in my life because I thought I was going to live there forever. Mexican food in Chicago. And then it depends what I wanted. If I want tacos, there's this place in Cicero, Illinois, Aguas Calientes, that I love to go to. But if I'm getting a torta, I'm going somewhere else. If I'm getting a burrito, I'm going to El Burrito Amigo. If I'm getting a quesadilla, I go to Taco Burrito King, right? So it depends for me.
That's fair. That is very fair. Okay.
Hold on, though. Hold on, man. Pizza for you.
Oh, I love
thin crust or stuffed?
Okay. I love... Okay, so if you go... So this gets into a whole category in and of itself, too. I actually prefer thin over...
Okay.
Overstuffed. If you do stuffed, in my opinion, it has to be cornmeal crust. So I have to go with Gino's East versus like Giordano's. Me and my wife battle all the time because their crusts are different.
100%.
Right? Yeah. I like that cornmeal crust versus the flour. I could always do a loose. You can't go wrong with the butter
loose
crust.
Loose is delicious.
You can't go wrong with loose. Yeah. But I prefer a thinner, I don't know, the wood fire Neapolitan, like, crispy, like almost burnt on the edges.
There's two layers of that thin crust, right?
I know.
Do you want a traditional like thin crust that has like the mozzarella, the sauce, Chicago style sausage, right? With pepperoni, onions, mushrooms, where the toppings all are under the cheese, or do you want that Neapolitan style?
Oh, more Neapolitan for sure. Okay. For sure. Like wood fire, you put anything in a wood fired oven and I'm down for it.
Wood fire's amazing.
There's a little
cooking
place.
Anything.
In there's a little place by us, and I haven't seen. You know, there's not a ton of traditional wood fire anymore. They've got it right there in the back of the kitchen. They just popping in the pizzas. It's just the char on the crust. It's just that's my jam. I can't wait to go to Italy and just
chow down.
Just chow down
50
on
pounds heavier
pizza,
but probably feeling better.
Probably
because
feeling
of
better.
The cleaner ingredients.
Uh huh. All right. Favorite food related memory from your childhood.
Oh man, so that one's really really easy, man. So. We, like I said, we grew up, we didn't have very much, and so we ate a lot of meals at home. And for us, it was my dad. He used to make these steak sandwiches. I think I told you that.
Oh, yeah, he did.
So I make them now as a tribute to my dad who passed away a few years ago, but my whole family loves these. Like, they ask me, hey, can you make those again? So all it is, it sounds like the unhealthiest thing in the world. We go to the butcher. You get ribeye, but it's thinly shaved ribeye, right? And then you get a 1 gallon container of corn oil, and you pour all that oil in the pot. You put the steak in there. You get cauliflower. You break up some cauliflower. You get some green peppers. Slice them up. Onions, tomatoes. You just put that all in there. And then you get, we call them bolillos, a little French bread, right? Like, you get those. That's cooking. You slice open your bread. You slather it with some mayonnaise. And then you're just putting the steak with all the oil and then the cauliflower, all the veggies on there. That's it, man. Like, it takes me back to being 6 years old every time I make it, man. I think about Super Bowls, World Cups, any sporting event, any competition. That's what I go back to whenever we're eating these sandwiches. And then my kids are the same now. It's like... My kids' son's in college. My daughter's in North Carolina doing some acting stuff. And they came home for Christmas, and I was like, hey, what do you guys want? They're like, steak sandwiches. We want grandpa's steak sandwiches. So to me, that's it, man. Like, all the time, always, even my mother, she's like, we got to make your dad sandwiches. So, like, I think as a family, it's just, I don't know, it's a really cool thing. I think it has so much meaning for us. But I think, like, instantly feel like a six-year-old the second I bite into it.
Brad, recipe idea. There we go. We can keep that in the back of the mind. We can make some of these steak sandwiches.
Yeah, you don't want to know nutritionals on it, man.
Okay. In the culinary world, what trend do you think is here to stay? What's I guess it could have been going on and it's still going on, but what do you think is here and it's not going anywhere?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. Because I don't think anything truly ever goes away.
It's true. It kind of builds upon.
Right? I think people just modify it to make it them, right? I think even like the fusions, right? Everybody used to think that was weird, but that's been going on forever. But I just think people are being more bold with fusion now than they've ever been, right? Like the Mexican barbecue, right?
I go into the like fast casual. We were at, what was the place we went to the other day? The Mexican place.
I couldn't tell
you. At the mall. The place we just literally were just at last week.
El Burrito Tapatio or something like that one?
No, at Oak Brook.
Oh, Blanco.
Blanco, right?
Yeah, that place is delicious.
But it's more of a, like, it's not Chipotle because it's a layer up, but it's still kind of in that fasty category. Like, I didn't feel like it was like restaurant-y, you know?
Right.
But I feel those are coming more and more coming
up.
The Cava style concepts.
I think the more, it's funny, man. I call this the Burger King style, right? Major way, right? I think that is coming back. I think it never left, but I think you're going to start seeing the sweet greens of the world,
ooh,
right?
Delicious.
The Chipotle's, delicious. Right? Cava, the halal guys, right? Everybody, it's like more customizable. I think it's crazy. We talk about labor shortages, but we also talk about giving people what they want. I think we're just going to gravitate more back to people driving the food they want, right? Like you're starting to see, if you look at restaurants now, like menus are smaller. Right. You don't have the Cheesecake Factory 72 page menu anymore. Right. You have smaller menus, really concise, really geared to what people want. The less is more. I feel like I should have patented that a long time ago
because
I feel like that's where everybody's going now. But that's where I see it. Right. I think comfort food, just make you feel good food is where we're at. I don't think it's ever gone, though. I just think we got caught up in movements. We get caught up in movements. Like,
comfort the cooking food channel, is definitely coming back. I think
as great as the cooking channel and the Food Network have all been, it's created this false perception of what people are really eating every day,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm sure you don't go home and make four-course amazing meals daily.
There may be chefs out there that do, but when you got children...
I'll tell you, like,
we're good with some pizza, some corn dogs, hot
cheese,
dogs,
and tomato soups. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even like for me, like when I go home, like occasionally I'll reach out to you and I'm going to make an extravagant meal. But generally, it's like, hey, I'm going to some buttered noodles and some Parmesan cheese, man.
You can't go wrong sometimes with that. Last one, and this is right up your alley. How do you stay creatively inspired? Because you're always pushing the boundary. You're always, what are we doing next? What are we going to do? How are we going to make it better? It never turns off, ever. It's always pushing the boundaries.
So I think, I think that's probably related to fear of not being good enough or failing, right? Like, I don't mind failing, but what do I learn from it? But I think the day I stop wanting more is the day that I'm done, right? Like that maybe I've peaked and I never want to feel like I've peaked. I never want to feel like, man, this is going to be like a counseling session, but I don't ever want to feel like I'm not good enough, right? So if I'm continuously getting better, I'm continuously pushing the boundaries, that means that I'm alive and well and pushing and staying true to who I am. And I think that's what drives it, right? I want my kids to see that, hey, dad didn't finish college, but look where he's at now, right? And my kids talk about it all the time. And like the kids grew up in Northern Illinois and they would go to high school and every time they'd be like, hey, what did your dad do? And my kids would tell them, you know, he does this or now he's vice president of culinary. And my son the other day was like, dad, like, how did you do it? I was like, just keep pushing, man. You just keep going. You just can't stop. And I think then it dawned on me, like, they saw that for me, right? My daughter has, school wasn't for her either. And I was okay with that, right? School wasn't for me. But my daughter is acting and she's in a lot of shows. She's an extra and she's doing all these things. And my son now is at Missouri, University of Missouri, and he's just pushing himself. And he's, you know, he's going to major in sports journalism and all these things. But that drive comes from them seeing me not settle. And I think that's my fear is that if I stop, what happens to everything around me, right? And it's a really weird way to think about things, but that's what continues to push me. Like sitting in an office with you, if I'm not pushing, like then am I who you think I am as a person, right? Like, am I not pushing enough where you're going to be like, oh man, maybe he's just tired and old now, right? Not that you would think that, right? Because there's a different bond, but that's where my mind goes. It's like, I just have to keep going, right? Because I don't ever want to settle or be complacent.
That's what I love about you. Always pushing the boundaries, always not settling for a little, even when there's times we both, it's like, let's just cut. It's like, no, like I push you, you push me. There's always that push to be better, the best. Complacency is just not acceptable in our world. That's why I love you. I don't have anything else. If you need fashion advice, this is the man to go to, especially in the culinary world. So that's all I got. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.